Fans, don't forget, if you're up in the Bodega Bay area, the Tides Wharf restaurant is open. Everyone is spaced. Don't worry, socially distant and masks and everything else that Gene Bogato takes care of up there. So you can go up there and have a great meal at Bodega Bay at the Tides Wharf restaurant. If you want to stay overnight at the Inn at the Tides, that's available too. But nothing more beautiful on the coast than Bodega Bay. And Gene has put a lot of time into all the protocols and everything, so everyone is comfortable and complying with all the rules that we have to do to have a safe, safe society right now. The snack bar is open. The beautiful fish market is open. And, of course, we're in the middle of a good wild salmon season right now as well. So that's up in Bodega Bay, the Tides Wharf restaurant. So absolutely, and I know Gene wants me to come up once baseball gets underway and do a weekend up there. Happy birthday tomorrow to Evan and Robin's mother-in-law and mother, Marlene Faden, and happy birthday, Marlene. We know that is coming up tomorrow. So on behalf of everyone, we welcome you, and we wish you a happy birthday, Marlene Faden. All right, joining us now, Mark Simon, Sports Info Solutions, Mark A. Simon Says on Twitter, and we've got a bunch of things to talk about this week. Mark, it's great to have you with us.
Hi, you're making me hungry for some good salmon.
The Bodega Bay. I'm just hopefully everything is going well up there, and Gene says everything's open. And, yeah, if whenever you're out in this area, we will send you up there for a good meal up at Bodega Bay, so you can count on that. Hey, but
yeah,
really good to
have right.
It's good to have you with us this week. There's so many interesting things happening. Aside from the fact that we will have baseball, which you are going to be very busy doing Sports Info Solutions and the things you do, but there are many, many interesting anniversaries in baseball that we sort of can celebrate a little bit and talk about, and I'll let you name a couple of them, and let's start with one of the weirdest ones, a three-team exhibition between the Giants, Yankees, and Dodgers. It was in the mid-40s. It raised money for bonds during World War II, but it was very interesting, a game with three teams, and you could explain how they did this.
So they alternated, who was at bat and who was in the field. So each inning was only, two of the teams batting. One of the teams didn't bat. But, yeah, they did it to sell war bonds. They sold a lot of them. There were 50,000 people at the game. This was in the middle of World War II. The Dodgers scored 5 runs. The Yankees scored 1 run. The Giants had no runs and 2 hits. The star player and the regulars played, which you wouldn't see now in an exhibition game, but the regulars played. Snuffy Sternweiss was the star player of the game, who won a batting title for the New York Yankees, was a good player for them for a while. He was the star. That taking place 76 years ago Friday.
Boy, Snuffy Sternweiss. And again, we love the names of baseball. Tremendous little second baseman for the Yankees. Tragically died in the early 50s in a subway collision crash in New York.
And then yeah, terrible story.
Yeah, that was Snuffy Sternweiss. But yeah, so the three teams played. They raised a lot of money for the war bond effort, and they got it done, and good cooperation there. All right, we've talked about this on the show tonight. Dusty Baker, of course, a legendary manager in the major leagues and managing this year the Houston Astros. He steals 3 bases in an inning for the Giants. Now, you think, did he go backwards? Is he Germany Schaefer? Did he go back to first base? No. He actually went around the bases and stole 3 bases. How about that?
Yeah, so let's explain. He stole second straight. Bob Brantley then walked. This is a game against the Braves, I believe. So there were first and second. Bob Brantley walked. And then there was a throw to – they ran a double steal. And they tried to get Brantley, not Dusty. And Brantley got caught in a rundown. So Dusty took third, and Brantley stayed in the rundown for a long time. And then eventually, Dusty scored.
Okay. So let me get this straight here. So Brenly's in a rundown long enough for Dusty to successfully get to third, and he kept going, and he stole home too, and they gave him the credit for two stolen bases on the play.
Yeah, it was against the Reds. It was the Giants won the game, scored a lot of runs in the game, and yeah, that was how they did it. It was very slickly executed by Bob Brenly with Dusty.
Very good. That's why you have to go beyond the box score. I like that. Okay. Mark A. Simon says on Twitter. All right. Now, Robbie Thompson, I got to know him very well this winter. We did a trip together for Giants Vacations down to Cabo San Lucas. Tough ball player. But the 34th anniversary comes up this weekend of Robbie Thompson getting caught stealing four times in a game. How about that?
So this is the weekend of weirdness, I think, in Giants baseball history, with the three-team exhibition, Dusty with this bizarre steal of third and home on the same play, and then Robbie Thompson got caught four times against the Reds. The Giants still won the game. He had a good game. He went 3-for-5 with two runs batted in. But in his defense, at least according to the manager, Roger Craig at the time, the first three were hit and runs, so not really his fault.
Okay. It had to be, because you just don't send – Robbie doesn't go four times on a straight steal.
Right.
But you pointed out on the show how important he was to the Giants and his war, that he is one of those surprises that you find on the Giants way up on the list.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. And we got one left base path adventure, if I can just kind of jump ahead here and bring it up. So Sunday is the 25th anniversary of Darren Lewis getting beat by the hidden ball trick on third base with Barry Bonds up. There was a conference at the mound, Armando Reynoso for the Rockies, and Vinny Castilla had a conversation and then decided to try it. And Darren Lewis said after the game, the umpire told me he got me by an inch.
Huh. Do you know the facts of how they did it?
Armando Reynoso handed the ball to Vinny Castilla, who went during a mound conference. Vinny Castilla went back to play his position. Darren Lewis took his lead. Boom. Out.
Yeah, and Reynoso's got to stay off the mound. That's the key to that.
Yes.
Yeah, well, all right, I like that. That's good. Hey, we've talked about on the show tonight a little bit about the late Jack Buck, and they did a wonderful documentary on him this week with Tom Verducci and Bob Costas. And really, it was really wonderful. Some of his great calls and the long career of Jack Buck. Did you have some thoughts about that? Because I know you've listened to so many of the old broadcasts.
Yeah, I actually watched it. MLB is doing a series on MLB Network. I think it's over a period of 4 or 5 Mondays. They did one for Vin Scully. They did one for Jack Buck. I think they've got one coming up for Harry Carey in a couple of weeks. It was very good. And the thing that I liked was if you've listened to baseball historical moments, you've probably heard Jack Buck call the Ozzie Smith home run in the 1985 playoffs. And you've heard him call Kirk Gibson's home run with the "I don't believe what I just saw" in the 1988 World Series. But they also showed how he called the Denkinger mess up at first base in the 1985 World Series in Game 6 when the Cardinals were just about to win the World Series, and Don Denkinger blows the call on the first play of the inning and calls the guy safe, George Gordon, when he's clearly out. And Jack Buck handled it like a total pro. And I was impressed because they said it on the documentary, Jack Buck tended to jump the call a little bit. He would always be like, this is going to be a home run. He would say things like before they happened. On that one, he stayed back and he let it go. He didn't make a determination. And it was extremely well done for a very controversial moment. He and Sparky Anderson handled it very well. And I do love, this is going to be a home run and go crazy, folks. I think they capture the excitement of the moment properly and were very well done.
Very well done. You're right. Harry Carey, I think, is the next one coming up. Now, I watched a lot of the 1970 World Series this week, And I thought it was outstanding. Kurt Gowdy was in there with Chuck Thompson. I think Jim McIntyre was the Reds broadcaster at the time. I think that was who did half the game as well with Kurt on TV. But this was a great World Series. And, you know, the Orioles lose in 69 to the Miracle Mets, and they come back in 70 and end up taking four or five from the Reds. But what good teams and the way they played. And it was just a great World Series, and Kurt Gowdy was a pleasure to listen to. Any thoughts? You always have some good insights on things in baseball. Any insights into the 1970 World Series that the Orioles vindicated that loss to the Mets?
Yeah, and I should acknowledge that I'm 45, so that predates me by about 5 years. So I didn't see it, but looking at it, I watched three innings last night. I saw Dave McNally, the pitcher, hitting the Grand Slam in the World Series. That was pretty cool. There were a lot of things that I was amused by. That Orioles team was stacked. Mm. Like, that Orioles team could have had, like, 12 All-Stars. I don't know how many they had, top of my head, but just between the guys that weren't, like Davey Johnson and Paul Blair and Don Buford, and the guys that are like the secondary guys to Brooks Robinson and Frank Robinson and Jim Palmer and Boog Powell, who had a tremendous year in 1970. And even like their bullpen, Pete Rickert had these great numbers in the bullpen that year. They only used 12 pitchers. Their pitching staff had three guys that were like completely dominant with Palmer, Cuellar, and McNally. They had four the next year with the 420 game winners. That was a ridiculous team. And that team could have won easily, could have won three World Series in a row. They didn't run into the Mets in 69 and the Pirates in 71. They lost in 71 in seven games. And they lost in 69 to a team that just couldn't miss at the end, which they acknowledged, actually, in the broadcast that I was watching, that nobody was beating the Mets that year. But that's a great team that probably is like right in that next tier after that 27 and 39 Yankees team and the 75 Reds were among the best teams of all time.
Oh, and it was Brooks Robinson's World Series. Yep. Every big play that could be made defensively, and he made some plays. I know some spectacular plays we've seen on some of the replays of that World Series, but there were some of the routine plays that were just – he turned them into just routine, spectacular plays that became routine with him. And it was his World Series as he, I think he tied the record for 9 hits in a 5-game series. He and Paul Blair tied Bobby Richardson's record that was set in 1961. So I appreciate your comments on it. It was a good World Series and a good World Series champion. Hey, the last thing with Mark Simon. Mark A. Simon says on Twitter, this is the 100th anniversary of the Negro Leagues. I know you'd like to comment on that.
Yeah, so they're doing a thing on Twitter. The Negro Leagues Museum started this thing called Tip Your Cap 2020. It's a hashtag. If you type it in on social media, you'll see a lot of people doing Tip Your Cap salutes. Actually, when I did mine, I forgot to post the photo. I just posted the text. But I posted a little story that I liked about the Negro Leagues and that I just thought was kind of I know people are going to look at it from a very serious vantage point. But there's a funny story from Josh Gibson, who was the Black Babe Ruth, who was considered the great catcher of his time and a prodigious power hitter. And he's playing in a game in Pittsburgh and he hits a ball so far that it goes out of sight. And the next day, the team is playing in Philadelphia. And all of a sudden, a baseball comes onto the field out of nowhere, and one of the fielders for the Philadelphia team snatches it. And the umpire yells out, "You're out!" yesterday in Pittsburgh, as if the ball had traveled off Gibson's bat all the way from Pittsburgh to Philadelphia. I read that when I was like 10. And that was like my introduction to the Negro Leagues. And I always thought that that was a really cool story. And there are so many great stories about the Negro Leagues. And it's worth reading something like a book about the Negro League baseball. There's Only the Ball Was White. If you go on the Negro League Baseball Museum Hall of Fame website, there's plenty of material out there if you want to educate yourself on something of that nature.
Beautiful website. We've had Bob Kendrick on. We've had, I think it's Paul Dixon on as well. or Phil Dixon, I forget, but both are outstanding interviews that we've had on the show from the Negro League Baseball Museum. Well, Scott Osler, I'll throw this out, in the Chronicle's got a wonderful article about a mythical all-star game between the great teams from the Negro Leagues and, of course, the Ted Williams-type players, the Caucasian players who played in Major League Baseball. And he doesn't give you a winner, but when you read the matchups, you say, boy, maybe the African-American team, maybe the Negro League team was the better team. And maybe these other guys would have been lucky to be on their team. So it's a good article. It's one worth looking at in the Chronicle by Scott Osler. Mark, always a pleasure having you on, and we're going to have plenty of baseball to talk about. You're going to be back in business, hopefully, if everything connects through spring training and all the things that we've got to go through. So we look forward to the next few weeks with you.
Thanks. Fingers crossed.
Okay. All right. That is Mark A. Simon Says on Twitter. He's from Sports Info Solutions. Mark Simon, always a pleasure to have him on the show. More coming up, KMBR 680-1045, the sports leader.